Sox fans, hey, welcome back to Hot Takes and Heaters. This is the MLB-centric podcast under the umbrella of Future Sox. He's Danny Miller. I am Nick Morawski. And if you're joining us live here, which we hope you are, but if you're watching the or listening, I should say, to the audio later, we've started the podcast, and Kopech is trying to get out of this game and lock it down for the White Sox. It's 3-2 right now here, top of the ninth, two outs, a 2-1 count, if I can get that specific, Danny. But something we talked about, Kopech as a reliever, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't want to get into it too much just yet until we see what he does with Travis d'Arnaud here. But
yeah. Can't find the strike zone everywhere but nowhere. He's got the velocity, but not pitching with conviction like Garrett Crochet did.
No. Crochet came out and pitched yet another gem. I mean, if we're going to start the show on a positive note here, you know, Garrett Crochet is a perfect way to do that. But
we will.
Since we're live, but I mean, we're going to talk about Michael Kopech instead. And I gotta tell you, man, there's a lot of people out there like, oh, Michael Kopech has looked pretty good out of the bullpen his first couple appearances. And I would maybe not agree as much as most people.
All right.
Reason being is he still, you know, has he gotten the job done in situations where he hasn't given up any runs or big hits or anything? Sure. But he is still going deep into counts with guys and throwing a lot of pitches, and that scares the crap out of me. We've got a guy who,
well, you know, if sorry, Danny, on my feed, I've got a White Sox winner, buddy.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Who had the second game of the Brave series on their
how about
on their
it? Bingo after 9-0 in game one, that was interrupted by a rain delay and a missing first base coach. The Sox come back with Crochet on the hill against an old friend, Ronaldo Lopez, who looked really good as well. Crochet looked just as dominant as he did opening day, which I definitely want to get to. But Sox have got their first win of the season.
Yay,
they
Sox
are
winner.
1-4. And that forecast for the day game on Wednesday, if you're, you know, outside of the Chicagoland area, I mean, it's looking bad. I mean, sleet, snow, rain, it looks pretty messy. But we're not going to worry about that right now. Sox are in the win column, buddy.
Yes, they are indeed. Crochet gets the first win of his career as a starter. Like you said, just looked absolutely dominant. You know, and then the heroics of Paul Dong come into play today, you know, on an evening where, according to the broadcast, the winds were blowing in, you know, kind of fiercely. I guess there were probably moments where it let up. Maybe, Paul DeJong got one, right at the right moment, but, definitely put one out of the yard today and, get us the lead later in the game. Couldn't throw it out there. Better hit by Garrett Crochet, and one very similar by Gavin Sheets on opposite sides of the field. He's seeing eye pop-ups. But, yeah, all in all, you know, just good to see a White Sox winner here tonight.
Yeah, some small ball offense that excuse me duck snort from Sheets, and then Paul DeJong flexing the
Paul
power.
Paul Harrison has entered the chat.
Yeah, you know, look, I don't think this team's going to score a lot of runs this year. And this, you know, this type of, you know, one run game, very similar, of course, that, you know, the Detroit series. And then Monday, you expected that to kind of happen. Atlanta has got a powerful lineup.
Indeed.
And they really ate Sox pitching and Sox offense really had no response whatsoever. But they're going to have these types of games. And I'm, you know, as we talked leading up to opening day, and it's to me, it's going to be about kind of individual performances this year. And a guy like Garrett Crochet, I have, you know, zeroed in on. He wanted this, being in the starting rotation. He won it, pitched really well in spring. That's one thing to pitch like that in Arizona. won the spot and then was dominant on opening day. You and I were there to watch it in person.
We were indeed. You know, it is, it's good to be back here, sitting here talking with you after we actually met face-to-face for the first time.
We did. Yeah, that was nice.
On Thursday afternoon. Really good to finally be able to do that with you and James. And then, of course, you know, Ian and I, who have had plenty of time together already before joining Future Sox. But, you know, getting out to the ballpark, and like I said, you know, we had that Happy New Year moment with a lot of folks. I know I saw some comments on your Twitter feed and Facebook and whatnot. And, you know, I had some of my own. James, of course, as well, you know, even had a rub some elbows with John Schriffen.
Yeah,
out there a little bit. You brought him right over to the to the big tailgate, and yeah. You know, it was good to be back at the ballpark. The smells of grilled onions hitting you in the face. Mm. Didn't get a chance to partake in any milkshakes. Not that I really would have wanted to this early in the season. It's cold out there, man.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, man, just great to be back out at the ballpark and be able to catch that Garrett Crochet gem in person.
Yeah, he lived up to the hype. In terms of weather on opening day, I mean, gosh, we've sat through, you and I separately, but you know, and so many other Sox fans were talking about it. There's been worse opening days by far. You know, a little chilly, absolutely. But we were in the sun down the third base line as you're heading towards the left field line, and I was just fine. You know, it was pleasant.
Yeah, it wasn't bad.
And, you know, it looked like, you know, Crochet was just locked in. You know, you clearly amped up. You know, I think he hit 98 miles per hour on the opening day. I think he touched 99 in this start against the Braves here on Tuesday. But both of these starts, he has just pitched with purpose. You know, zero walks in his opening day start. I think he had one walk tonight innings.
And that one tonight could have easily have been a strikeout.
Some rough calls behind the plate, you know.
Yeah, definitely kind of, some inconsistency for sure.
Been following the Sox for a few games now, but that's what I was hoping to see from Crochet. Just, you know, that confidence. You know, get it, throw it, which, of course, all pitchers kind of have to do that now with the rule changes. But, you know, knows that he's got a plan, knows what he wants to do, and just gets into a rhythm, gets into a groove, which can help you out as a young pitcher. You know, having a veteran presence, you know, it seemed like Maldonado picked some good spots to have conversations with Crochet here in this start against the Braves. And could that be something that he could bring throughout the season? We know Maldonado's offense isn't really going to be there, but, you know, maybe being a mentor behind the plate, you know, helping Crochet stay cool, calm, and collected. I don't know. I think that could be useful here in Crochet's, in a way, kind of rookie year, I guess. I know it's not his rookie year, but it kind of feels like it, right? Because this is the role he's wanted, and now we're getting to see it. It's only been two starts, but, you know, he kind of mowed through Detroit. And Atlanta was going to be a different test. I mean, Atlanta's got, you know, a serious ball club here. Nothing against Detroit, but Atlanta's built for October and beyond. And Crochet handled himself really well.
Yeah. You know, I don't want to say that it comes as a shock, because this Braves team is a monster. You know, we're talking about a team that we recently has, you know, gone into the World Series and has made multiple, you know, extended postseason runs, just really well built and coached. And you know, you expect to maybe give up some strong hard hit balls and some barrels and some runs to these guys. And Crochet was pitching the no-no into, well, I shouldn't say no-no, because I think the walk came earlier in the game. But into the fifth inning, I believe, is when Crochet gave up his first hit. And then there was two in that same inning. But, you know, all in all, it, for him to be as composed as he is right now, and, it, you know, a White Sox rotation that doesn't really feature any, I don't want to say doesn't feature any veterans, but doesn't feature any seasoned vets. Because the veterans that are there are guys who have kind of, you know, been beaten up and missed some time much like Crochet has in his career. But, you know, it's just nice to see him have that, that kind of composure to go out there and just look dialed in and focused. And the command has been absolutely fantastic. Every time I watched a pitch go up tonight, I noticed Maldonado just kind of flashes the glove for a second, and he puts it down. He's not trying to tip anything off. He flashes the glove, and the ball goes right to where he flashed it. And yeah, that's pretty impressive stuff, if you ask me.
Yeah, he's hitting spots. He's working inside and out. That cutter, you know, that's been coming out of the zone, coming in the zone, coming in on righties on their hands. You know, when you mix up the eye level and you've got the velocity, which obviously, you know, you develop that off speed pitch that's still coming in, that cutter's still coming in with high velocity. You don't give hitters much of a chance. I mean, you have such a split second, you know, and at some point, I don't want to say you're guessing, but you kind of are when a guy like Crochet's locked in like that. You know, it's like, I got no chance. Good pitching beats good hitting any day of the week. And, you know, Ozuna got him, but that's to be expected with this Atlanta lineup. I think what Crochet takes from this outing is, wow, I was able to, you know, piggyback, you know, on what happened on opening day with a ton of adrenaline against Detroit. Strung that. Now I've got two together. This one against a really tough team in Atlanta. You got to be feeling just really good about yourself. This was something we discussed, you know, in his outing with against the Dodgers, you know, and when he took care of business against Otani and some of the feared hitters. Again, it was spring training, but it's little things to build on. It's these little foundational blocks that, hey, that's all you can do. You know, you just kind of have to take it one step at a time. Obviously, you're not going to, you know, pitch multiple days in a row. You can only do so much. But what you have, your opportunities that you have, make the most of them. And Crochet has done that. And I would say it's, you know, Luis Robert Jr.'s, you know, two bombs over the opening day weekend. That was nice. You mentioned the Campfire Milkshake, which is, of course, a huge hit and is taking over everything by storm. To me, Crochet is the talk, man, right now. This is the most exciting thing.
Absolutely. And, you know, you brought up Maldonado a couple minutes ago. If Crochet is going to be his battery mate, you know, if he's going to be his battery mate for the foreseeable future, I'm okay with him going 0-4. If Crochet's going to pitch like this to him, if this is the guy that Crochet is comfortable with. Now, having said that, if there's another catcher on the staff that maybe has a little bit of a stick going and we're using Martin Maldonado and you find out that maybe Crochet's just dialed in and it doesn't matter who he throws the ball
right
to. Well,
yeah, good point.
Because, yeah, you know, Maldonado is looking like he looks like a tank out there right now. I mean, the guy looks, when I'm watching him run to first base, I don't know who's slower, him or Andrew Vaughn, but they both look like they're in a tractor pull when they're running down the first baseline.
The old Paul Konerko experience. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Paul Konerko at least looked fluid when he ran. You know, he wasn't going very far, but he looked fluid when he ran. You know what I mean?
Look like you know what you're doing running wise, sir.
I mean, those two guys don't even look comfortable running. Yeah. They look like clod horses.
What catcher is fleet of foot? I mean, I'm sure there's been few.
Yeah, well, Andrew Vaughn is much younger than Martin Maldonado.
Yeah.
And he just, I don't know, he runs like he's muscle bound, which I don't buy.
Well, I mean, you know, I bet you he's heavy legged. I would assume he doesn't miss a lot of leg days trying to generate that power. And it's the speed's just not there.
That's great. I'd love to see it one of these days.
some talk of Ronaldo Lopez too, and you know, this is a guy that I didn't know what to make of this guy when he was in a White Sox uniform, and then he got his LASIK surgery, and he was nails. You know, I thought that he really had a future. He's got some stuff. What he was doing, I think, before he had the surgery and even, you know, at times after, he was still developing into that pitcher, not just thrower. His stuff just caught way too much of the plate. He didn't have any movement on his stuff, and he didn't have confidence in his secondary stuff. And you saw a much different Ronaldo Lopez. Yes, it was against the Chicago White Sox in some very cold weather on the south side. But still, you know, pitching with confidence, it shows no matter what. And Lopez was doing that.
Yeah, you know, we always liked Raylo. He was a homegrown product, you know, here in Chicago. And, you know, he had his moments of struggles. And they moved them back and forth between the bullpen and the starting rotation and really didn't know. And then, you know, there was a talk of, well, let's make him a closer. And, you know, we didn't know what we were going to do with him for a long time there. Was he going to be a spot starter for a week rotation? But like you said, after the LASIK surgery, you know, and he could actually see the signals being put down, which I guess the last year plus here now didn't really matter. I know they've got that pitch comm, but. You know, oh, yeah, I see that comment that you threw up there, and I actually have my gun loaded and ready to go because Trey is starting to learn my triggers. So
Trey with a comment on Tim Hill, who didn't do well for himself in the Detroit series. Trey, by the way, I'm 6'3". Trey was asking about the photo, and I think it was just maybe the angle. I don't think I'm a giant. But Shriffin, Shriffin was 6'3", if not 6'4". We were kind of eye to eye when I met Shriffin.
Yeah.
So
you were definitely the tallest guy in the group. I come in right at about 6 foot. I might be an eyelash under, but you know, maybe it's the pick. I don't know.
Could have been the angle. It was an upward angle.
Well, my wife, who is. I mean, she's an Oompa Loompa. She's like 4'11 or something. Actually, I think she's 5'1", but whatever. She's the one that took the
picture. Blame it on her, of course. Sure.
She had to take that picture from, like, you know, way down knee high. You know what I mean? So
right. An ant's perspective is what you would call it. You know, look, I think we could get into the opening day weekend against Detroit. There were some, you know, there were some positives. You know, you brought it up, you and I and Ian Eskridge, we were talking a little bit a few hours before, you know, we hit live and started recording. You know, Jordan Leisure, I mean, that's a guy that it's good to see getting his experience and doing pretty well for himself.
Yeah, first outing looked really good. You know, I'm kind of hoping that we get to see him in a lot of those high leverage situations early on and beyond, because, you know, the talk is this is the guy that is going to be the closer of the future. Hopefully we get some value out of Michael Kopech at some point this year. I don't want to beat that horse because obviously we opened up the show talking about him as he closed out the game for us tonight. But, you know, Jordan Leisure is a guy who we've been excited about since, you know, the trade deadline last year, when he came over. And he's just one of those guys that's got the right makeup and, you know, had great success coming out in his first appearance with the White Sox, and looking forward to seeing more of that, you know. And I think there's quite a few positives that we can take away early on in the season. You know, we got to, like we said, we got to see a little bit of Jordan Leisure. We got to see Braden Shoemake come out in his first major league at bat.
Yeah.
And put one out of the ballpark. How do you feel about that?
The amount of productivity that's coming from our shortstops compared to what we were getting last year, especially in terms of power, night and day. When did Tim Anderson hit his first home run last year? Was it?
It was like August, wasn't it?
Was it August?
Good God. It felt like it.
I was going to say July. Right before the All-Star break. Maybe you're right, man. If it's August, that's insane.
Yeah, I don't really know.
A lot of last year I kind of blacked out things that were happening with this team. So details like that, maybe you're right on August. But it's good to see you getting a little power from middle infield, shortstop especially.
Yeah. Clutch Hattrick in the chat says it was August.
Wow.
I didn't think I was off, but you know, we did. We were waiting a long time for that one. And obviously, you know, Tim was battling a bunch of injuries last year, even when he was in the lineup. I don't think he was 100%. And, you know, he's over there in Miami doing a little bit of the old things that Tim Anderson does.
What's Miami's record? You told me what
Miami's 0-6.
0-6. You got
in Berger. Large part to their pitching. Yeah. It hasn't been
great.
You know, I think they have a 41 runs given up in six games already. Boy. Yeah, the run differential is looking pretty bad. I mean, you know, the White Sox run differential isn't exactly great right now either, but Miami's is exponentially worse.
People made fun of, like, well, yeah, after the Detroit series, it's like, what, a -3 run diff. And I think that's what the frustrating thing for me is. They lost, and I in a way I wasn't terribly surprised, but they were one run games, and they could have easily won those games, especially the second game where they started out with a 3-0 hole, which was no bueno, and they clawed back. Luis Robert Jr., two bombs. They're up 6-3, and they completely gave that away. That's a game you absolutely have to have. That was the extra innings game, where earlier in the game, Aloy grounds into a double play with, I think, bases loaded, one out. Stop me if you've heard that one before. Aloy grounds into something with runners in scoring position.
Yeah.
And then he, you know, he can't help himself in extra innings. Got the ghost runner on second, gets a ball in on his hands, first pitch he sees, if I'm not mistaken, and goes for it and swings, pops up. I think it was in foul territory, if not third base. You know, that's not the pitch.
Uh-oh. Nick? Oh, I hope it's not me. Can you guys hear me? I'm checking with the chat. Anybody here? I have lost Nick completely.
Hopefully. Dan, are you back? We lost you for a second there.
No, I think we lost you, actually.
Lost me, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
There. Yeah, we lost you for a minute.
On my feed, you were gone. So I was just going to treat it like a locked on show where I was just going to talk by myself for another 25 minutes or so.
Well, we're definitely back. So,
okay. You know, I don't know if you were watching that in real time. I was, they definitely tore it apart in the post game.
I'm sorry. I know we were talking about the Aloy
Jimenez swinging at the first pitch he sees in extra innings, and a pitch that he wasn't going to be able to do what he needed to do with it, which is to shoot it to the right side. He pops up, you know, that stuff was problematic big time last year in extra innings, not being able to get the job done. And that at bat, that game from Aloy, just absolutely awful. Like, it just didn't seem like there was an approach whatsoever. Whereas Luis Robert Jr., who hit those two bombs and is on a different level than Aloy. Okay, let's be honest there. Robert Jr. talks in the post game about how he has a plan in the offseason where he's tracking pitches and he's working on, you know, selective hitting, finding, you know, pitches in the zone that these are my pitches. I can do something with these pitches, you know, and then letting the others go. I mean, that's the discipline I've been hoping a lot of these Sox hitters have taken to heart, you know, in the offseason. So to lose, you know, those three games, it's like, okay, I get it. I know how this season's going to go. But you could have had those games. You know, this is against the Central, Danny. This, like, oh, we're so happy to be in the AL Central. So glad we're in the Central. We'll do something with it, because you're going to have teams like Atlanta and Baltimore, Toronto, there's going to be some Cincinnati, you know, there's going to be some teams that are built to win coming in April and May outside of your division. You got to win those games. And Saturday, that second game was just awful.
Yeah. You know, and I looked at, you know, it did some stats earlier today, and the win expectancy as opposed to record was like supposed to be 1-3. As of, you know, after the game yesterday, And I'm guessing, you know, without really diving deep, I'm guessing that Saturday's game was that one where the White Sox had the win expectancy. But the thing is, you know, they all were one-run losses. And the White Sox did face some really good pitching in that series. To only, you know, it still hurts. A loss is a loss, like Ozzie said in the after show on Saturday and Sunday. You know, the thing is when you're facing good pitching and you know, I heard Michael and I'm sorry, I heard James and Ian speak a little bit about this last night on their show that, you know, James specifically said he thought the Tigers were going to be better, but they only looked, you know, like mediocre to him. Maybe just, you know, average or whatever, going up against the White Sox. And I thought, well, you know, that's possible. It was cold for those games. I mean, it wasn't super cold on Saturday. I guess it's probably fairly decent weather
but
for early
what
on in the
team
season.
Is really coming out like maybe the Dodgers, you know, maybe that are just coming out and just like gangbusters, like, you know, putting up
and,
massive
amounts of offense.
Honestly,
I think the White Sox didn't play bad during those games.
The first game we talked
no
about
offense
day,
other than
they could have won. I mean, they just were mystified by Skubal, a guy that they've seen many, many times. I mean, what, three hits? No team, I think, had an extra base hit. And to ruin that outing by Crochet, yeah, that's an absolute sin. But they had no plan.
Right. You know, the thing is if you're not going to have offense, you're not going to win games. Now, we've been talking all offseason about how we hope for those individual accolades and maybe a little bit more of an entertaining brand of baseball this offseason, because we know that the White Sox aren't going to be winning any divisions or doing anything great. Excuse me. You know, I feel like I'm not hating on the White Sox as much as I would have been, say, last season. I don't know if partially that's because I'm not expecting much from them.
No expectations.
But at the same time, I'm not exactly upset because I'm not seeing them kick the ball all over the field and make dumb mistakes that are keeping themselves out of
it. There was an outfield issue. It might have been on Monday. I thought the right fielder and Luis Robert Jr. collided. I thought there was some sort of outfield miscommunication issue that happened.
Yesterday? I missed that.
There really wasn't much. I would agree with you. I'm sorry. Go on.
No. I mean, you're not going to avoid every mishap, right? There's no team is perfect throughout the season. But I feel like this White Sox team last year had already had like 8 or 9 errors by the fifth game. You know, we were seeing a bunch of dumb all over the place, and not just, you know, errors where we're missing routine balls or kicking stuff around, like dumb mental errors. So, you know, I don't know. So Clutch Hatrick says, yeah, Fletcher ran into Lewis, and it must have been one of the moments where I walked away from the game and I didn't catch it because I didn't watch most of that game.
Never walk.
Well, you know, it was middle of the afternoon and it was raining, and take care of around here because now I'm not working.
Yeah,
okay. You know, if the wife comes home from work and she's like, "What'd you do today?" and all I got to say for myself is I watched a White Sox game, it's not going to be.
I get it.
So, you know, but you know, my point is that sure, so far they look like they're probably better defensively, right? And you know, at the point that I walked away from the game, I think they were already down like 6-0.
That was when the rain delay happened. And and then they came right back, and I believe there was that 3-run home run.
It didn't take long after that to come back. So,
yeah.
You know, it is what it is.
You're fine. I'm just giving you a hard time. I just so happened I was able to catch most of it on Monday, and it was ugly. It was just ugly. It looked miserable. The players didn't look like they wanted to be there. Fans, of course, didn't. It was just not
guys
good.
Out there eating soggy pizza in the storm. Like, I mean, good for you, dude. But wow.
Yeah, and that was when the you know, the first base coach.
Knock it off, Trey. Knock it off.
You know, this is
I got to make it through the season here.
This kind of went viral where Jason a bourgeois. Our first base coach was MIA, and there was a delay of game because they didn't have a first base coach. The Sox needed to be reminded, and that caught fire on social media. Pedro was asked about it before Tuesday's game, and Grifols said that Jason Bourgeois was in the clubhouse with his headphones on, reviewing the team's outfield positioning when he was late to get out on the field after the rain delay yesterday. And he went on for several sentences just talking about how amazing Jason Bourgeois is, and it doesn't bother him. He knows his character. He knows his TWTW. I mean, the big rumor is that he was going to the bathroom. You know, he had a bowel movement and he needed to go and relieve himself. He had to go to the bathroom and he just missed it.
I'll be honest with you. The way the White Sox offense was going yesterday, he probably could have taken a couple innings off and it wouldn't have made none of the difference. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'm not saying.
You'll see that in Little League sometimes where it's like the last guy out, like he's just going to be the first base coach. You know, you just stand there and just a warm body, just, you know, wave your arm if it's in the gap, stuff like that. Remind somebody of outs, which I don't even know if Darryl Boston was doing that last year. So I was glad that we had a new first base coach, but you know, maybe we're making too much out of it, but it's just like those moments where the Sox just can't get out of their way. And they,
it's one of the White Soxiest of White Sox things. Really, you know what I mean? Like, par for the course, brother.
It really is. So,
coaches don't even want to show up. It's cold and rainy. I'm going to go take a dump. I'll see you in a few.
We'll backtrack just to Sunday where, you know, Aloy is hurt again. Aloy pulled an abductor and, you know, the Chicago Sun-Times, they ran an article, you know, just a blurb almost talking about, you know, yeah, here we go. This is, man, we still have about 20 more minutes or so. And I feel like this is you're on an unusual pace, which for those of you not watching the video, Danny's got another heater. As we talk about the often injured Aloy Jimenez, he was running out, you know, an infield ground ball. He grimaced. He pulled up gingerly. Steve Stone called it out, and, you know, he was removed from the game. I think the MRI is it doesn't sound like anything's too serious. He might avoid an IL stint. They might play a man down with their roster. You know, the Sun-Times had a whole spread online on their app, on their Sun-Times app, of all of Aloy Jimenez's recent injuries. And, you know, there might have been 11 situations in the last like 3-4 years that I counted, different situations where he has had to have an IL stint. It's just mind blowing. What do you say? At some point, you got to say he is what he is, right? You know, this is who he is. His body just can't hold up.
Here's the thing. I look at him and I don't see a guy like Luis Robert Jr. or Yoan Moncada or even Andrew Vaughn, like you talked about on his, you know, leg day. Andrew Vaughn doesn't skip leg day. Aloy doesn't look like he's fat or anything, but he looks maybe
he
like
lost
he's just
a bunch of weight in the offseason. He got in shape.
But he looks soft. He doesn't look solid.
He doesn't move with confidence.
He just doesn't look like an athlete to me sometimes. He doesn't. He just like, I'm like, why do you look so awkward, dude?
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong. Everybody loves to watch Eloy when he's hitting 450-foot bombs. But the problem is, and again, I hate to, you know, piggyback off James and Ian, but they were on yesterday, and I did happen to catch the show. And, you know, they said it pretty well when, you know, you look at Aloy, it was Ian that really touched on it about how his swing looks different between now and spring training. He went on this giant run early on in spring, and everybody's like, oh, my God, look at Aloy. He's on a heater. And, you know, he gets out on a plane, comes back to Chicago, and the swing looks like it did last year. And I couldn't agree with what they said more when they were talking about it last night. I'm like, that's exactly what I've been seeing from him this year. He's chopping. He's swinging at garbage. He's swinging at stuff in on his hands. Well, the one thing that he did differently in spring was he was selective of pitches. As a matter of fact, I remember hearing somewhere that he was told, don't look at anything below the belt. If it's coming, if it starts below the belt, let it go. It doesn't matter if it hits the bottom of the zone, but chances are they're throwing you that junk that's low and away that you like to hack at.
Yeah.
So if it doesn't, if the pitch starts below the belt, just leave it alone. You're waiting. You're looking for a pitch in a certain window. You're not even looking at the whole strike zone. You're compressing the strike zone into a certain area where you know you can hit balls. You're looking for hitters' pitches instead of trying to swing at pitchers' pitches. And he did that in spring, and now he's not doing that. He's swinging at garbage. I don't know if he's pushing or what, but it's not the same person that we saw in spring training. And it's frustrating as hell to watch this guy who's we've been told has all this potential.
Oh, yeah.
It just doesn't seem he can't get his brain locked in on any of it.
Well, you know, now he's pressing. Well, not anymore because he's not playing, but when he started off rather cold, you know, again, just a small sample size, but when you had so much success in spring and it felt like you were in a groove and you're seeing things and you trusted your swing and mechanics and all that stuff, and we saw all the, you know, the visuals with where his hands are now compared to last year, and look at, this is the new Eloy. He's going to play in 150 games and he's going to just be a masher. And I was on that. I mean, I was bullish when we had our prediction show that he could get to 20 before the All-Star break. Man, am I a moron? You know, I just don't think his body's going to let him even try to do that.
And you didn't say 74 though.
Yeah.
You're not that big.
Hey, I wasn't going to bring that up.
You know, Ian was very nice to point out in last night's show live. And then again, just in the chat here, one down, 73 to go. Oh, thank you, buddy. I couldn't walk that back fast enough during the show last week, and I'm never going to live it down because it's recorded, right? Even though I tried to walk it back last week, but
there really should be
the first one to admit, I feel really dumb right about
you. You were so good, made some future socks, sweatshirts, and you know, I think maybe we'll get some merch out, you know, hopefully at some point throughout this season. There might have to be just tongue in cheek a future socks shirt that just has 74 on the back.
Hashtag 74.
Hashtag 74. Yeah. You know, what Eloy has said in years past and throughout, you know, his time in a White Sox uniform, of course, with all the different injuries and stuff and like kind of like workload management with his legs in the past, where he hasn't been able to get into a groove. You know, that's been the problem of like he'll play two games and then they'll sit him. And he wants to get to a point where he was for a period of time, I think last season, he was playing consistently. You know, and he felt good and he got into a rhythm, and now he's on the shelf for I don't know how long. And for a guy like him, I just don't think he's able to jump right back into it. There's really not much to jump back into because he didn't really have much going for him before the injury, but it's just that rhythm, you know, the timing and all of that stuff, that's going to have to start all over.
Yeah. It sucks when you see it happen this early on. You kind of hope that, you know, there was that whole debacle with Lenine Sosa getting pulled.
Yes.
In the middle of the game, and everybody, I mean, only hours after the whole Eloy injury happened, and everybody and their brother making assumptions. And then, you know, Fegan comes out with a tweet saying, Lenine's on his way to Chicago, but, there have been no roster moves yet. And, you know, you're going, okay, here we go. This is that abductor strain is going to be something, you know, worse than we were hoping for. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we don't get an IL move.
Right.
For, you know, a couple of days. We still don't have one.
Nothing.
And I'm
different.
Not sure if Ian's still in before. The chat here. Do we know if Lenine is still in Chicago or has he made his way back? I'm not sure. But, you know, it just seems weird. And they brought this up last night in their show. What is the point if we're going to, I mean, are we just trying to have him here ready to go if they're not going to make a move? Like, don't you make that call when you know you're going to make a move? Or if you're just going to be day to day, like, okay, we'll play with 25 again. And, you know, maybe Eloy comes back you know, later on this week. But if he doesn't,
they've done this before. The Sox have done this before.
They're notorious for it.
Yeah.
That's one question. What's the point? Do you have anything? Like, why are we going to wait 5, 6, 7 days to put him on an IL stint and play with 25?
Yeah, and even if Lenin, you know, does get, you know, brought up, I mean, I don't even know what kind of playing time they're going to give him. That hasn't gone historically well for him. So, look, I hope it's good news for Aloy. But I'm at a point, Danny, I hate to say it. It's just, I can't get up for the letdown, as the fine folks of Sox on Tap would say. I think Johnny Nani says it best. Don't get up for the letdown. And that's really where I'm at with Aloy.
Yeah. It's tough. Again, he's one of those guys that we've been talking about all offseason, about hoping he can get on his horse early. Like you said, if he gets 20 early on in the season, we get some return for him.
Yeah.
I hate to keep parroting what other people are saying, and I'm bringing a lot of this stuff up from last night's show with James and Ian, because, you know, there might be a very small handful of folks that aren't listening to that show and listen to this show. Those points need to be, you know, reiterated and hit on again. Is if this guy isn't, if he doesn't come out and do something like that, why would anybody else want to trade for him? Why would you want to take a chance on a guy who obviously can't seem to stay healthy or perform? The White Sox aren't going to get anything back for him.
The way the Sox have been making moves, and I think we're going to talk about it in just a minute, the way the Sox make moves, it's like they're the only ones that would go after this player if they had the opportunity. You know, like I could see them being on the outside looking in on Aloy, being like, this guy can't stay healthy, a lot of potential. He doesn't really fit our model in terms of versatility. I think we should go after him. I think that would be a smart move. That just seems like a White Sox move. But since the Sox have Aloy, you know, they're not the ones that can obtain Aloy. No one else is going to bite on that.
Why would we? Why would anybody want to take a chance on this guy, give something away to the White Sox for him, when, you know, most of these teams probably have somebody waiting in the wings that can at least hit the ball out of the ballpark every now and again? Whether, you know, because, you know, obviously Aloy's not anywhere on the field. He doesn't have a position to play. And you hope that, you know, his bat is good enough to keep him around in the league. But if his bat doesn't come around and he can't play the field, well, then where does he go?
Yeah.
You know, it's a short trip home for him. And I hate to say that, because there were some exciting moments. But some guys just can't play DH without playing in the field. They just can't seem to keep that focus going. Yeah. And I'm starting to wonder now if Aloy is going to be that guy, because, you know, the second half of the year before last, the second half of 21, when he came back from injury and it was pretty much the first time they used him as a DH only or mostly.
Mm-hmm.
And he said he didn't really want to be a DH at that point, but he came out and that second half of the season, he looked like a guy who could be a DH. He hit the ball very well.
Yeah.
But since then, not so much.
He's been called, you know, I think by Rick Hahn, maybe is not an injury prone player, but I mean, the proof is there. I'm sorry. You know, we've got,
it just doesn't stop.
No, we've got quite the resume here. Speaking of resume, Mike Clevinger, he is back in a White Sox uniform. That came, how about this one? That announcement came as the Sox were getting their brains beat in on Monday, on April 1st. And I really thought that was going to be an April Fool's joke. But I think Robert Murray from FanSided that I got credit for breaking that initially. At least that's where I saw it. And then it kind of flew all over social media. MLB investigation could not determine that Clevinger violated the joint policy on domestic violence, sexual assault, and child abuse. And he wasn't disciplined. MLB chose not to suspend him on the basis of him voluntarily choosing to enter therapy. Apparently, his accuser had publicly stated that that's all she wanted. Clevinger was 9-9 with a 3.77 ERA in 24 starts for our Chicago White Sox last year, a team that lost 101 games. So if you're saying, hey, he was the best pitcher they had, it was on a team that lost 101 games. Grifol, Danny, this is what Pedro Grifol, our fearless leader, had to say about Clevinger coming back to the South Side. Clev was a really good teammate here. He pitched really good baseball for us last year. He's a really good competitor. So we'll see how it all plays out. But he certainly has some attributes that we saw last year that were on point to who we are and where we want to go. Danny, you could take this and then I could follow up if you've got some thoughts, opinions, things you want to air out.
Clevinger. Well, first off, we'll just talk about Clevinger, the pitcher. We won't get into, legal issues right off the bat.
Yeah.
But Clevinger, the pitcher was, he was serviceable last year. I wouldn't call him good. He was maybe slightly better than average. He got
better
a lot
than what
of
I thought.
Yeah, better than what I expected, especially coming off injury. And then, of course, the investigation and just being in the news for all the wrong reasons. But he was solid, right? And he ate a bunch of innings for us on a team that needed somebody to come out there and eat innings, especially, in the second half of the season when guys like Lance Lynn really couldn't get it going at all last year and ended up going away. And then you got Lucas Giolito going away. You needed guys like Clevinger and Tuki Toussaint to kind of pick up the slack, right? And they both did. The thing is, though, is Clevinger was, I think he kind of overthought of himself in the offseason because, there were reports that he was asking for $10 and $12 million this year at some points in the offseason. People were going, yeah, probably not. And you would think that number would have come down at some point, especially since the White Sox paid him $4 million on a buyout for his contract, for him not to come back. My thing is there are a lot of folks out there that are going to say, oh, 29 other teams didn't want him, but I don't know if that's true. James and Ian again talked about it last night. He was available, or he could have been available at the deadline last year. But, during that time, he was injured, and nobody wanted him because he was injured. And you're not going to take a chance on a guy when you don't know you're trying to make a playoff push. If you're one of those teams trying to do that thing, and you're not going to take a guy who's,
Why
on the shelf.
Why don't you think a team went after him this offseason?
I think it was because of his high price tag, and even though the White Sox were paying that $4 million buyout, he was asking a lot of money. And, he was solid last year, but was he $10 million solid? I'm not sure that he was. Yeah,
the White Sox went after him like he was white hot in fall of 2022 before knowing all of the allegations and all of the off the field stuff. So, for what was it, 10 million, 11 million, 12, something like that? That's what they went after him. And he was questionable health-wise, after his 2022 season. So now you got a guy that just showed, the rest of the league, hey, I can pitch, I could perform. Look what I just did on a 101 loss team. I'm probably not going to go as high as what the White Sox signed me. Where are you? Where's everybody asking for my services? Like, what's going on here? I just feel like teams just said, I don't want it. I don't want the baggage.
Well, and that's probably a good assessment. That's why I said I wanted to start with Mike Clevinger, the pitcher, first, because obviously the baggage is there. It's a blemish that will never go away, unfortunately. All you got to do is look at White Sox Twitter. Deservedly so. There were a lot of women, prominent White Sox Twitter women, that were like, this guy, he's back. I really don't want to watch baseball anymore. I don't want to have anything to do with the White Sox anymore because they keep bringing this guy back. You know, he went and got his therapy, and maybe he's a fixed dude. We, you know, obviously the White Sox organization knows a whole lot more than we do about it. But then you get the other side of the coin where there's, I mean, this is really polarizing for a lot of fans, where people are like, hey, you know what? He fixed himself and he wasn't actually charged and he didn't have to serve a penalty. But there's Bauer out there who had the longest ban in baseball history before being let back in eventually. Kinda. I mean, nobody wants to touch him still. But you've got that side of the fan base is like, hey, if we can sign Mike Clevenger, we can sign Trevor Bauer, right? Like, why not? Let's give this guy a chance. He wasn't convicted, but he was disciplined by MLB. That tells me that there was more to it than any conviction, you know, whether or not there was a conviction. So, you know, I don't know. Those both of those guys have blemishes, and obviously 29 other teams didn't want to touch Clevenger. What makes you think the White Sox should go out and touch Bauer too?
It just seems sometimes that the organization is kind of tone deaf, especially in a year like this year. Bringing Mike Clevenger onto this team does what does it really do? What is it going to achieve? You know, there's the argument of, well, someone has to eat innings with all of these arms that are in the rotation that don't have heavy track records, that are coming off injuries, that are unproven, that might be on a limit like Crochet. We need someone to eat up innings. That is not new information. Okay. That is information that we knew probably back in November, December. Maybe the Sox were trying to really bring in Lorenzen and they couldn't match, you know, that dollar amount. Maybe the Sox really did check in on maybe a Johnny Cueto, who I'd rather see pitch. If you're just looking for someone to eat innings, I have no problem watching Johnny Cueto. Zach Greinke does not want to retire, is a Royal. Seems like a match. You need someone to eat innings. I don't care about the performance. I don't care about, you know, we just want someone to eat innings. What about Tuki Toussaint? Wasn't he supposed to be the innings eater? You saw what he did after the deadline in 2023. He was thought of maybe as a rotation piece, didn't have a very good spring. They tried to get rid of him. That didn't work out. He's in AAA. He can be your innings eater. You bring in Brad Keller. Why? I don't know. To probably be an innings eater because you need arms.
He's a former Royal and he can throw the ball, you know, in the direction of the plate.
So,
anyway.
Like, there are guys, there are two guys I just mentioned that are in the system already. Are they not ready? I don't.
Schuster.
You know,
there it is in the chat.
Again, if it's an innings thing, it's like, clutch, great guys. Minds. You know, and to me, I don't think it's necessarily an innings thing. I think it's maybe Pedro said to Getz, hey, I really like this guy. I want him back. I really liked him in the clubhouse. He really helped get my message across, or I don't know, maybe Clevenger, you know, rubbed wrong with a couple players that are now gone. And Pedro's like, well, I liked him. I liked what he brought in terms of identity and culture. Jerry, what do you think? And Jerry doesn't care because his milkshake sales are going through the roof and that's all he's worried about.
A so good move like, for them, by the way, to make sure that they had at least some in the Visi View Bar, because when it was first announced they were only going to be in the stadium club, they're oof. Come on now. You can't promote that as your number one new food item ticket and only have it in the stadium club. So anyways.
Yeah, I just I don't know. I wonder whose real decision it was when they thought about this. And maybe it's been something they've been trying to work on for a while. But, you know, when you hear different things, and I know like the fan base is split and, you know, in terms of likability, you know, and amongst a lot of other deeper issues with Clevenger or other names you've talked about. But, you know, I had a feeling that the Sox organization knew, like after all the news came out and everything with Clevenger, like that the fan base, and I don't know the percentage, but just like he wasn't a likable dude. You know, he had solid numbers again of all the pitchers on a 101 loss team. And I think it's like those fans that just didn't find him very likable. Like, what value are you going to bring? They kind of wiped their brow and said, finally, like, we're done with this guy. You know, he's gone. He's out. Like, we can start clean. Whoops-a-daisy. That was a mistake. We didn't know what we were getting ourselves into as an organization. Nobody touches this guy during the offseason, you know, and there's this quick scramble now to like bring him back after an 0-4 start. It's brought up in the chat
and you know, other places as well, including Ian and James last night, that, you know, cash considerations.
Yeah, I heard that. How about it? You know, way to use your money.
I mean, have the White Sox hit their spending limit and they literally needed the, you know, whatever money they got back for Jake Cousins to get a Clevinger deal done? I don't know. At the end of the day, they did save some money because I believe he was signed for like $13 million this year and you know, all in. He's at seven million.
Is he even ready to pitch right now? Is he going to have to be? Are we going to be waiting for this guy? And was this a move also in anticipation of how they're going to manage their pitchers? Is there an injury that we don't know about?
One thing's for sure. You know, a lot of folks were watching that game and Flexen having his struggles, and they were like, "Wow, they're pulling the trigger. They're pulling the plug on Flexen real quick." And wait a minute, this is not a reactionary move to Chris Flexen's start the other day. Let's just get that. Let's make this plain and clear. This was obviously in the works before that happened, because you don't just call Mike Clevinger and say, "Okay, we got $3 million for you."
They had to be in conversation.
You know, I saw the tweets and in the Facebook posts, and I'm going, "Slow down. It doesn't work that way." But you know, anywho,
on a team that, if Clevinger takes away opportunities from, I think, a young arm or an arm that we want to see get experience, develop, build up this year, I think it'd be really, really maddening for me, you know, because this to me is just a throwaway year. You know, whatever take you have, that's your take. You know, I can obviously disagree with some takes, but my personal opinion, this Clevinger doesn't move the needle to all of a sudden we're competitive in the AL Central. For me, it doesn't. I don't look at that saying like, "Wow, thank God we got an ace or a top end, you know, rotation guy, because now we're really going to go after the Central." I don't look at it like that. I don't know, Danny. Do you look at that saying like, "Oh wow, I think, well, maybe the Sox are going to be competitive"?
No.
74.
Let's just be very clear about that. No, I do not think the White Sox are trying to be competitive by signing Mike Clevinger. To be honest with you, I'm perplexed about it as most, other than the fact that we do need somebody that is going to be able to eat some innings. You know, and as bad as the White Sox are supposed to be this year, I'm sure they don't want to be total trash. They definitely don't want to take somebody out of the farm system and rush somebody who is at least close to major league ready right off the bat. You know, we're looking at Charlotte probably having the best pitching staff in the minor league system for the White Sox right now. And some of those guys need to be there for a little bit, you know. Birmingham is going to have the best pitching staff for the White Sox farm system. Charlotte staff is going to be a little, I don't know, you know, this is going to be where your guys that you're going to be pulling from to just try to kind of fill some spots are going to come from, because I honestly don't think they're going to have the best pitching staff in Charlotte for most of the season. It's just the way the organization is built right now. We're waiting for some guys to graduate up. So you're going to get your veteran arms that need to stay hot and ready to be jumping on a plane. That's where they're going to be, and that's who we're going to be pulling these guys from. So my question, yeah, I see you, Clutch 74. I get it. Nobody feels more dumb about that comment than I do right now. Seriously, I really do.
We got the Royals coming up, Danny. They might be able to make hay against the Royals. It's a 4-game series.
Listen.
Could be completely different by the next time we talk.
Maybe. I could see them creeping up a little bit. You know, I I don't know how much, but I can see him creeping up a little bit. I can see him winning some of these one run games. But yeah, 74, that was just stupid. And I couldn't walk it back fast enough live on the show, and now I'm going to pay for it.
Well,
for,
that was, you know, my fault. I piled all over it. Well,
no, it's okay. But, you know,
I couldn't let it.
I got dinged a few times for being too negative with this team. So I tried to do something positive, and maybe I – not maybe. I definitely picked the wrong place.
My thing with
the
negativity stuff is it's when it's realistic – it's not negative. Like, you're just being real. You're just from what you follow and how you look at this team. That's just a realistic take. You know, if you go low, I don't think that's negative. It's just, it's coming from an educated, you know, kind of mind is watching what has happened this off season and beyond. So we got one in the win column. Sox are 1-4 as you know, we wrap up this Hot Takes and Heaters. We'll see if they get the rubber match in with the Atlanta Braves on Wednesday afternoon. And then, of course, four in Kansas City against the Royals. But we'll be right back here Tuesday night. And I kind of like how this could go, Danny, is sometimes we might be, you know, the post game, the recap immediately after a game ends.
Yeah, you might even catch us, you know, seventh, eighth, ninth inning. On some nights, especially some of those West Coast games, we'll be probably right in the thick of things.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You guys can come hang out with us. If you don't, you know, and real quick, I just want to point out John Schriffen and Steve Stone have been working pretty well together, I think, at this point in the season. I'm not trying to take anything away from Jason. I'm going to miss Jason like everybody else does. Standing O at the home opener, by the way. Yeah, you know, if you guys don't want to listen to them, you want to come hang out with us there while there's a game on, you can always watch the game and mute it in the background.
Yeah, especially keep you entertained. As Clutch talked about, when those 7-10 starts happen, you know, we'll be
definitely be catching the tail end of some
games.
We'll
be chopping up and kind of talking about the game in real time at the beginning of our episode. But really appreciate everybody jumping in as usual. Love the comments. You know, find this podcast absolutely everywhere you find your podcasts, or Twitch and the YouTube channel. Subscribe to that Future Sox YouTube channel. Pass it along to other Sox fans in your life. He is Danny Miller at Danny Miller FS. I am Nick Morawski at Nick_GGTB. And next time we talk, you know, who knows? We might have won a series maybe against the Royals, Danny.
Oh, yeah. Slow down. Let's just kind of get back into the
I'm just trying to
the win column once or twice. I don't want to say we're going to win any series yet.
All right.
Apparently, if I said that, I'm not going to live that down either. So,
well, a pleasure, buddy, talking Sox with you.
Yes, it's been fantastic. Again, we talked about it pre-show. We had an itinerary of where we wanted to go with tonight's things, and then it was a therapy session from there on out.
Always so is. Always
thank you
is.
For thank you for being my free therapist. I really do appreciate that.
Absolutely, buddy. Thank you so much, folks, for listening. Until next time, go Sox!